when the history books are written on Reading's 2018-19 season, they need only remember that the Royals beat Millwall 3-1 on October the 20th, and thus we can avoid any awkward questions about how fortunate Paul Clement's men actually were. But, however, on the Tarleton Podcast, episode 172, we're all about the awkward questions, and joining myself, Mark Mayo, this afternoon to discuss Reading 3, Millwall 1, is Westy. How's it going, mate?
Hello, it's good to be back. I don't think I've been here since the first game of the season.
Yeah, we were just saying it feels like a bit of a long time, but the stars have aligned and we've managed to pull you in today to talk all about Reading and a bit of a smash and grab, really, wasn't it?
It was. Again, a typical Championship game. We say it quite a lot. As I've been doing this show a long, long time now, and we say in the Championship that games could go either way, and unfortunately, over the last couple of weeks, Reading's sort of games that could have gone either way have generally gone against them, or they've sort of thrown away decent leads. And this game was very similar. I think Millwall last year, they come down and really give us a bit of a lesson, and it's a testament to their sort of step back this year that they couldn't create, when they created chances, which they did, they either couldn't score them, or on this occasion, our goalkeeper was in terrific form.
Yeah, and it feels like that Millwall game that they won last year is probably the only time I can ever remember Millwall coming and beating us. So in a large sense, it's normal service resumed, which is nice. So we'll crack on with the recap in a moment. Then before we do that, I'll have the standard issue thank you to all the Patreon people who continue to donate to the podcast and continue to allow us to make a small amount of tips and pocket money out of this podcast. And we're putting it to good effect at the moment, purely because it's actually getting us... we get older, as we all get older, it's getting a little bit harder to follow Reading and our jobs and whatnot. So it's kind of helping us to do that at the moment in terms of an iFollow account and everything. So that's where the money's going at the moment, which makes sure that we can actually know what's going on in the games and then translate that into coverage for you all. So without further ado, let's crack on then and talk about Millwall game in the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
So Dan Wimbush kind of summed this up best to me straight after the Millwall game and said that was like watching a Yap Stam Reading team not really get a great grip on the game, but still come out with a win.
Yeah, and again, it's been a nice change from what we have seen so far, well, especially this year, but last year as well, where teams have come down, to be fair to Millwall, I think they've gone away disappointed they didn't get something out of the game. But like you said about the history books, when you look back and see the 3-1, you think that it must have been a comfortable afternoon for Reading, but it was far from comfortable. I think another worrying thing about this game is I think a lot of sides have figured out that if you bully Reading, then you can beat them. And it's worked for other sides. I think Blackburn done it in the second half when we was 2-0 up more recently. I mean, Cardiff done it to a good effect last year where they played a lot of high balls, a lot of big men, you know, that sort of game. I think Millwall have gone down that road. I think teams are starting to figure out that, like I said when I was on their first game of the season, that Reading's centre, or well, the centre of Reading's team, is quite weak if you decide to battle against it. And I think it showed first and second half, but especially second half, that Reading have got a bit of a soft underbelly if you have a really good go at them.
Well, that was how West Brom got back into the game so easily, really, a couple of weeks ago, just putting balls into the box, asking questions and saying, you know, if you're composed and you're physical enough to clear the ball, then that's fine. But as you saw from Millwall's goal, we can't just clear the ball. It just seems to bobble around too much.
Yeah, we've had a lot of goals this year like that, very similar, where we've not really dealt with it. No one's sort of been the big commanding centre-back who's sort of put their head through the ball and got it away. The only time we have seen it this year is the only time we've kept a clean sheet, and that was against Hull when O'Shea played at centre-back and he missed nothing. Until his legs went at the end and he unfortunately didn't miss the player either. But he's the only person, I think, that has made Reading solid aerially. Again, he's got his own weaknesses. But I just think that teams now are starting to figure out that Reading are quite weak if you bombard them. And it didn't work for Millwall, but it quite easily could have done. And I think people have took heart from games against Blackburn and West Brom when they've seen Reading take a lead and be quite comfortable in the match, really. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the soft underbelly shows when you haven't got anyone really that's dominant in the air and you can get rid of that way.
Isn't it weird though, because at the other end of the pitch, Yaku Meite has emerged as... I mean, I just think it's kind of Matthew Mansa, isn't it? Just that sort of... I wouldn't trust him to kick a ball 5 yards, but if he heads it or if he's holding it up, he's actually a really quality player. And I kind of wonder with Meite, is this his peak? Has he got as far as he can really go? And, you know, every now and again, he'll score a couple of headers, he'll hold the ball up, but how can he get better? What's the story?
He looks like a heavyweight boxer that plays football, doesn't he? I think a lot of people don't like Meite just because he is that sort of big lumbering type player. But I think he's got more about him than that, to be fair to him. And it always worries me when you give a player a long contract that they sort of take their eye off the ball a little bit. Because let's face it, Maite's not really made it in England. And this year he's been given the opportunity by Clement to play.
Mm.
And I think at times he's looked okay. And I think of other times I thought, you've had a really poor game today. But with his power and his strength, he reminds me so much of Antonio, who's at West Ham now.
Yeah.
Didn't really get his chance at Reading, but he looked like a bull in a china shop. But you knew there was something about him. And obviously he's kicked on with his career and done quite well up till now. I think Maite, again, at 22, I think he's not by anywhere near peaked yet. And the fact that he's scoring goals will give him confidence. And I even for a big lad, there's a couple of that header, the first header he scored was a magnificent header. I mean, it was a good cross, but there was still a lot of work to do with that one.
Yeah, very accurate.
And I've said before, again, I've been watching football since the 80s when I was a kid, and you don't often get forwards now that are good at heading a ball, a good aerially. There's not that many when you think about them. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to have loads. And at Reading, we've always had good ones like Jimmy Quinn and Trevor Senior. But you don't get them sort of players no more. They're very much sort of tricky players in general, or quick. And it'd be handy. It's handy for any team, especially in the Championship, to have a player that can win the ball airily. And I think we've lacked that over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I suppose it's weird because Bodvarsson, he can score a good header. I remember it was against Stevenage in the FA Cup last year. He scored one from effectively outside the box, I think it was. Sort of. So having that sort of plan B, because I mean, it's completely at odds with like Baldock and McNulty. They're not the sort of players that you're going to lump a ball into the box. No. So you've got to play balls in behind, balls in the D and stuff like that. And Reading have tried to play that sort of intricate style for years now. And the strikers have always been the thing that it's not worked with. If you think back to having Vidra or Graben, having those sort of intricate strikers has never really clicked for us.
No, I think the last player that really has been a big plus in the air was when Jason Roberts came down to Reading.
Yeah.
That's probably the last player that you see as an aerial threat. And other than that, I mean, Bodvarsson, yeah, he does score the odd header, but you wouldn't count him as a real aerial threat, would you? He's okay, but he's
more of a workhorse.
Not great. And if Maite can work on that bit of his game, then I think it can only be an added bonus for Reading. And for his career going forward, there's not that many players like that about anymore. So I think he could go far as long as he carries on with his work ethic and ability shown.
Yeah, and that third goal as well. I mean, watching the highlights back, you sort of wonder how the third goal actually happened, because Bakuna puts a decent ball into the far post and Maite scores, and it's almost like Millwall just weren't aware that he was playing. It was really odd, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, he's a big target to miss as well. You'd have seen him drifting under the back post, and it made me laugh that he was complaining about the foul on the goalkeeper. I'd be more worried about their marking at the top. And again, but yeah, he was in the right place at the right time, and that's all you can ask of anyone who's playing up front.
Yeah, and Bakuna's set pieces, I think it's probably gone under the radar a little bit, because Bakuna's not really, I mean, I don't really know what sort of centre midfielder he is, and I must have watched him about 25 times now. But his set piece is becoming a little bit of a plus now, with the fact that, you know, he scored from a corner against Millwall. He can obviously put a decent ball into the box. We've had another couple chances in the last few weeks, and I think that's probably last season something we just didn't have at all, someone who could deliver a consistent set piece.
No, and I also think that because we've seen Aluku take so many free kicks and corners so badly, I think anyone's going to look half decent.
Our standards have plummeted.
That's right. But yeah, Bakuna, I mean, he sort of looks like he's nailing down that place in the midfield now. I still worry about him. I think still with Bakuna, I still think his head goes down a bit too quickly when things aren't going too well. And again, sometimes he looks a bit powder puff. But in other occasions, you look at him and you think, well, you could play a little bit higher, but he doesn't show that form often enough for me. But yeah, his set pieces have been good. Also like to mention Tyler Blackett. I think he had a good game. I think you have to have a left-footed player down the left side. And if you look at some of the goals we scored this year and last year, a lot of them come from Blackett's crosses.
Yeah.
Crossing's good. I mean, I've said before, he switches off quite a lot, but in general, his crossing's good. And if you can get Blackett playing at the level you know you can often, then I think he can be a real asset down that left-hand side.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Gunter dropped to the bench, but he still managed to get on the pitch. So you'd never really know whether Clement's not playing Gunter because maybe Gunter had an injury or something, or because he just has lost faith in him to a large sense. One player who did come in and stole the show, really, for a large sense, was Antsi Yakola. And this is almost annoying now, isn't it, that we've got three goalkeepers who are all decent. They can all pull out good performances and good saves and whatnot, but none of them are totally reliable.
No.
I don't have a favourite out of the Walker, Mignone, I presume both of those were injured for Saturday because it was George Legge on the bench. And 10 saves that Yarkola made was the most of any goalkeeper in one championship game this season. A little bit worrying that came against Millwall at home, but it's good that he pulled him off.
Yeah, I think you got him to thank for winning you the game, really. He's made, well, at least two excellent saves. I mean, he made a lot of saves, a lot of them are routine, but the one he made from a Cooper's header was an outstanding save. I listened to Clement after the match on Saturday, and he said that Maloney would have played, but he came to him the day before and said that he didn't feel like he was 100%, and he thanked him for that because, let's face it, we don't want a goalkeeper who's not, doesn't think they're 100% in goal. So he probably would have started, and if he'd have played, he might have had a different result. You don't know. But for Yarkola, I mean, I thought he'd done well last year when he came in because he got put in for Maloney after his dip in form. I think he's been sort of harshly treated, really, because he hasn't done an awful lot wrong. I still worry about his kicking. But like you said earlier, there's three goalkeepers there. Someone said on the radio on Saturday that it was nice that they've got three goalkeepers at first team level. But what worries me is you've got three goalkeepers there that haven't shown that they're number one goalkeepers.
Yeah.
So they're all lacking something. I think Yarkola, if he doesn't start on Tuesday, I would ask to leave the club because you can't do no more than that and not start a game.
And you also, I just feel like at some point in the next three, four games, if he does get that run, he'll make an error. And then we'll be back here again saying, well, we've got three goalkeepers, all of which at some point in the first 2-3 months of the season have all at that point made serious errors.
I think
you've got to pick one, haven't you?
It's a bit like they're on the continual loop, aren't it? You get two games, you have a couple of decent games, you make one mistake, the next man goes.
Unlucky lad, he was the least recent mistake.
He was the least poor, yeah.
But I think back.
You can only ask him to do what he'd done on Saturday, and let's face it, he got him 3 points.
Yeah, Gareth McCleary coming back into the team as well as another notable thing that I picked up on. How do you think he did? Is it a kind of typical first game back into the team?
Again, he's not played for 8 months, I believe. He's different to the others in the fact that McCleary will go outside of players and try and get a cross in, and that's where our goals came from, ironically. But with McCleary, you know he's a championship player, you know on his day he's a very good championship player. And again, the concerning thing about McCleary starting is the fact that nobody else is nailing down their place. They haven't kept him out. And to be fair, I wouldn't have thought you'd have brought a player in who's barely played for 8 months if you had players that were really pulling up trees on the wing. And that's just not happening at the moment at Reading. And we've got, what, six probably wingers that you think are all decent, but no one has nailed down a position.
Yeah, it does. We'll talk about Mo Bower a bit later because there's a question in the mailbag about Mo Bower, but even he can't show to Clement that he is the man and say, you have to start me every week. And I feel a bit sorry for Josh Sims, has kind of been in and out of the team, and some people would say we're probably giving him too much of a bit of slack because of his, you know, he's quite young and he's obviously quite exuberant in his play. But yeah, generally speaking, you can't, nobody at the moment in that position or in the goalkeeper position can go up to Paul Clement and say, I have to start or I'm handing in the transfer request because you're badly treating me, because it's just not the case.
Yeah, it's just not the case. Even Sims, I mean, yes, he's done well when he's come off the bench, but he started games and hasn't been great. He's not been bad, but he's not been great. Yeah, it's a concern that you've got so many good wingers and no one's really nailing down a place. But good to see McCleary back. Like I say, he's been a good servant to the club, and you know that on his day, he's as good as anybody in that division.
He's getting towards one of our longest serving players now. I think it must be Obita, him and Gunter must be three off the top of my head that I think are longest serving, which it feels weird in a large sense because it doesn't feel like, I mean, Obita obviously has come through the academy, but it feels like the other two have just kind of slipped into the background quite often when they've been at the club.
Yeah, they have. And again, McCleary scored some big goals for us though. And you know that he's got that in him. And good to see him back. I wouldn't expect him to be fully fit for a while, but he certainly paid his part, I thought, on Saturday.
Yeah, before we move into pub chat then, final question, sort of sum up the game. Does this paper over the cracks, or will it be a necessary confidence boost to sort of build on and grow out a bit more after a couple of disappointing results? It's the fourth time this season I noticed that we've conceded so soon after scoring. And that's it. I mean, the mentality problem is the thing we've probably spoken about most on this podcast this season. Does getting a win that's a kind of smash and grab help to remove that? Because if anything is, the fact the players know they didn't play quite too well, but they still got away with it, gives them a bit of confidence to say, you know what, we don't have to play perfectly every single time to win, and the pressure can alleviate a little bit from that.
There's some good things. We're scoring. We're scoring pretty much every week, even if it's just the one, but we are getting goals, which is good.
Yeah.
Defensively, we've looked poor for two seasons. You know, we do concede goals. We have got a soft underbelly. I said at the start of the season, I still think Reading's biggest problem is their central midfield. I still think it's too weak. I mean, we're missing the Iranian guy on Saturday, and I think he's a big miss because he looks like he is a solid player. Big, strong, doesn't do anything spectacular, but he allows the others to play. Without him, I think you're very weak in midfield. But what did make me laugh is when I was listening on the way home, they said that we've only beat teams that are below us. That's concerning. I think that it'd be more concerning if them teams were beating us and they were above us.
Yeah, there are only about four teams below us as well.
Yeah, and I think we beat all of them. Yeah. But yeah, but we're more concerned if we're not beating. We are beating the teams below us. And in the position we're in, this looks like we've got what we've got to do. Because
minimum requirement.
Yeah, it's a minimum requirement. Does it paper over the cracks? Yes, because we could have lost on another day. But like I said earlier, I think all championship games in general could go that way. The only thing concerns me, as I said before, that we do seem to be weak when it comes to a battle, like an aerial battle. We do seem to struggle. And again, our marking's shocking sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's just as well we're not going away to a team managed by Gary Monk on Tuesday night.
That yeah.
might present a few problems in that department. Obviously, we're kind of filming this on Tuesday, so later in the show, when we come to any other business, we'll kind of focus on Birmingham and Swansea as a bit of a pair, because obviously a lot of people can be listening to this probably on Wednesday morning after we've gone and beaten or lost 6-0 to Birmingham, one or the other. So with that in mind, we'll go on to Pub Chat next, and we'll be comparing this team with one of fond memories? Somewhat fond memories.
Fondish, should we say.
Yeah.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Just before we came on air, Westy, we were having a fond reminiscence of our time on Reading FC podcasting, as I've now clicked over onto 1 year of hosting this show since Wim hung up his microphone and allowed me to take over, and it's been a little bit longer for yourself.
Yeah, I did say we're going to do the 9-10 Reading team against today's players, and I just said to you just off of air there that it's been November the 22nd, 2008, was the first time that me and Paul done the very first Rules podcast. It was fan cast then. Mm. But yeah, that's when we started it. So yeah, it's quite ironic that you picked this for Bill Pub Chat this week. And it's been 10 years now since the first Rules podcast, which I started a long time ago now. Yeah. Doesn't seem that long, but certainly is.
Yeah, we'll have to do we'll do a special show on the sort of exact date a bit, because it's about a month or so away now. But we'll do this. We're going to do a little Dream Team Pub Chat and work out our favourite 11 or the best team 11 from 18-19 versus 09-10, and of course that is a Brendan Rodgers / Brian McDermott season. So I thought if I pick the one before that, it's too easy, because obviously all the players from the Coppell team will go in.
Yeah,
and if you pick the one after that, then yeah, it's too easy again, because you pick all the McDermott players that went up that year. So
I was just looking down as she was talking. I think it's pretty easy this one as well, to be honest.
Well, the problem is that, I mean, you'll see in the goalkeeper section, it's obviously Yarkola, Mannoni and Walker versus Federici and Hamer. So you have one player that would probably throw in the bin from the 9-10 season, one player that you just hold up and it's straightforward for that one. So I probably might have to be very uncontroversial and say Federici for that.
Yeah, again, looking at, we just said about the three goalkeepers we've got now, they've all got a mistake in them. And unfortunately, Federici had a mistake in him now and again as well.
Yeah.
It's quite costly in the semi-final of the FA Cup. But you'd have to say overall, Manone has never held down his first the goalkeeper shirt number one at any club he's been at, really. He's been in and out quite a lot, even at Sunderland. Federici, I think probably historically and looking back, you'd have to say great kicker of the ball, great shot stopper, sometimes lacked a little bit of dominance in his box, but compared to the other four, then yeah, there's no contest really.
Yeah, and this went with Ben Hamer as the sort of backup goalkeeper that year. McCarthy was floating around, but he was on loan at Yeovil and whatnot. But with Hamer, yeah, he's been in the Premier League for a couple of years now, and he's been reserved. He's not one that I ever consider saying, oh, he's one that got away.
No.
I've no regrets.
He's never sort of stepped up and been number one for very long anywhere. Certainly not above the position we was in then. But he's made a decent career out of goalkeeping, so well done you.
Yeah.
But I can't pick you, unfortunately.
Yeah, so Federici in there. Right back is probably one of the tougher ones. It's Yadom or Gunter. Versus, I mean, I've put Rossini in there as an option. He did pretty much leave the club during that season. Jay Tabben, Sean Cummings, Brynjar Gunnarsson were all kind of on rotation under Rodgers. It really was a problematic position because Murty had left from the season before, and he really didn't know what to do with it. And then Andy Griffin came in about January sort of time. So I think for this one, I'm going to put in Yadom, because yes, Griffin did come in January and had a good start to it, but it wasn't until maybe the next season I think Griffin really kicked on and proved his credentials at Reading. And at the moment, it looks like Yadom is kind of there to stay and has made that position his own.
Yeah, and unfortunately, sometimes when you look back at older players or older games or players that have been here a long time, you've had a lot of experience of their errors, whereas Yadom is pretty new.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he's sort of on a honeymoon period at the moment. But again, he's not done anything wrong. He does a lot. He's a very good player. When you look at the other side, the 2009-10 team, Rossini, I never thought really done it at Reading, but after he left, he seemed to have a better career, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we kind of matured, didn't we?
Yeah, so again, retrospectively looking back, again, Cummins, again, I think we let him go. He went to Millwall, didn't he? End up at Millwall. Again, he'd done all right. Tab was a great, really good player. Really good. He's the sort of player that could fill in anywhere. Possibly not centre-back just because of his height, but he gave you everything he had, and I think fans like that in general. Bruno Gunnarsson, I know he played at right-back, left-back, but he's definitely a good midfielder. Griffin was very solid when he came here. He was what we needed at the time.
Yeah, very experienced head. Because Cumming, that season was, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love Sean Cumming so much, because that season when he came in under Rodgers, he was absolutely awful to start with. And the way that he came back from that and became a really steady championship right back, I've admired hugely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it's down to injuries and people leaving that he sort of got his chance again, wasn't it? And he had that game where he played very well and then he sort of stuck in there. And again, I think he got booed off before that. Do you know what I mean? I can remember a couple of times him getting booed off the pitch, playing poorly. But you've got to have a lot of strength of mind to be able to come back. I mean, Blackett's done it as well, to be fair. You've got to have a lot of strength of mind to come back and get that position and make it your own. So he done well. But I think you'd be hard-pushed to go past Yadom and Gunter, really. Just Gunter, I know he sort of divides opinion, but compared to the others, two of them are good players, but I don't think it's their position. And I'd be hard-pushed to say that Griffin was better than Gunter.
Yeah, yeah. So which one are you going, Gunter, then?
I think I'd have to, yeah.
I'll go Yadom. So we'll move on then to centre-backs, and we've got Liam Moore, Thiago Alloy, Paul McShane or John O'Shea versus the eclectic mix of Matt Mills, Zurab Kizanishvili, another January signing that year.
Still love him.
Ivar Ingemarsson, Alex Pearce as he was just coming through, and Darren O'Day I've put in there as well, who I think Darren O'Day, for me, it was another player who defined the Rodgers era and everything that just didn't fit.
No, yeah. He came with a big billing though, didn't he? From Celtic.
Yeah, Celtic. Yeah,
yeah. We all thought, oh, this must be good. We was wrong. He wasn't that good at all. Mills, I still can't forgive him for flipping us the bird during that match. I could never put him in any Reading side ever just because of that. Zurab Kizanishvili, I still love him. I still think he was, again, he had a mistake in him. He was a bit too casual.
It was a shame that he had his worst game for Reading by some distance at Wembley.
He really capitulated that day. But again, he's a good player. He played at a high level. You could see he was a good player. When he got the ball, he was very steady on it. But I don't think at any stage you can go past Ingemarsson. What a great footballer he was. He's one of those players you never thought was outstanding, but he was. I know that doesn't sound right, but he just, especially when he had Sonko with him, he's a talk Sonko through that game. Do you know what I mean? His steadiness means Sonko could be a bit of rack now and again and get away with it. Anyone who's ever played with him, I've listened to interview, they say what a great centre back he was. A.D. Williams sings his praises quite a lot of what a great professional he was. So you'd have to pick him. Again, historically, you'd have to say probably O'Shea was the best player amongst that. But not for us, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, not a 39.
No, not for us. So you'd have to say Moore and Ingemarsson, probably the best two standouts there, unless you can come up with something different.
Yeah, well, I'm tempted to put Moore in. I think the thing is with Mills is that he was such a strong centre-back. But the question is that, for me, is that after he left Reading, obviously the talent he had and everything like that, he didn't go and do any better. He completely peaked in that sort of team in 10-11 before he left to Leicester. And after that, his career was really just kind of mired out. Where is he now? Is he at Forest or Bolton?
He was at Forest and then he was at Bolton. I think he might still be at Bolton. But Reading done good business on Matt Mills.
Yeah, fantastic business.
I mean, they got him relatively cheap, I believe, from Doncaster. I think they paid $1 million or so for him.
Yeah,
He wasn't cheap.
And he was new for Rodgers that year, wasn't he?
Yeah, and they sold him for like $4 million, I think, didn't they? And again, he didn't endear himself to the fans, and he wasn't a great footballer, but I think he probably would have to say that some of his better years were when he was with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll go more on Inge Marson as well, and that brings us on to left-back. And left-back in the Rodgers / McDermott season was completely dominated by a man who was, I think he was third in the Player of the Season contendings, and that was a young Ryan Bertrand. And him up against Tyler Blackett and Omar Richards, I can't look past Bertrand for this, not just for the career he's had since then, and obviously, you know, England's international, Premier League regular, etc., etc., but even in that season alone, was a step above the quality at left back we have now. And yeah. I suppose Jordan Obita as well, but he's not really fit, so I've not really included him.
Yeah, but even if he was fit, he still was nowhere near. He couldn't lace Bertrand's boots, really, could he? And I think when he came to Reading as a young player from Chelsea, you could see that he was destined for better than the level he was playing at the time, and that's just been proved by the fact that now he's, like you say, he's representing England.
Yeah, so we'll go as a sort of 4-4-2 formation, and we'll move on to right midfield, and this is where we have James Henry and Jimmy Kebbe up against Sonny Aluko, Gareth McCleary and A.D. Popper. And this, I mean, Kebbe was, as I was doing this, I thought, oh no, Kebbe, he came good a little bit later than that, maybe it's a season after, but Kebbe was second in the Player of the Season vote for that year. And, I mean, it's just so hard to just imagine the sort of football we'd be playing now if we had Jimmy Kebbe in the team, and compare that to the inconsistency of Aluko, the lack of fitness that McCleary really brings to the table, and Popper, whatever he does bring to the table, I'm not sure quite what it is yet, but I can't look past Kebbe for this one.
No, I can't look past Kebbe either. He was one of those players, for those who aren't old enough to have seen him play, he was one of those players that was frustrating because he sometimes looked completely disinterested and then within a second he'd win your football match. I think the best game I ever seen him play for Reading was against Leicester at home, where he just, all they'd done was give him the ball and he absolutely destroyed them. Based on a historic memory, Kebbe is the best footballer, in the best performances compared to the rest of them. But again, McCleary, just for his time of his service and the fact that he has put in a number of decent displays for Reading, it is a pretty close call. But I would have to say that Kebbe is outstanding. From less of the other three. Popper, I think there's more to come for him, and Aluku's never shown anywhere near the form we've seen him for other clubs at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know what the future holds for Aluko, because we spent so much money on him, it's kind of conflicting whether we spent 7 or 4, whatever million on him. But he's on a long-term contract. He's going to be on a decent wage.
Yeah.
He's getting on towards his, I think he's about 29, 28 now. So he's not necessarily someone who's going to be, you know, picked up by a Premier League team at a potential.
No.
So, you know, we're kind of stuck with him, it seems like now.
We are stuck with him. And again, it's disappointing for him. I mean, he must hate the fact that he can't bring his form to Reading as anyone else does, because it must not be nice to be on the pitch and have people having a go at you when you make mistakes. But he continually does them, so you think he would have learnt. But yeah, you know, Aluku can be a good player, but just not seen it here at all. And Popper, he's either been on loan or injured since he's been here, but I quite like Popper. He's one of the players that he gives you all he's got, and whether that's enough sometimes is debatable, but you can't ever have a go at anyone for trying.
No, this is true. And into centre mid, and you're talking earlier about how centre mid is the kind of problem area for this team. Looking back on that Rodgers McDermott team, it felt like it was a bit of a problem then, because there are so many options here. I've got Khalifa Cisse, Marek Matijovski, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Scott Davis, Brian Howard, Jem Karachan, and you can also throw Tab and Gunnarsson into that mix as well. And that's, we pretty much always played 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1 with Sigurdsson off the striker,
but
we were well stocked for centre mids then, and it shows that no manager could really settle and pick either of those as a combination, or, you know, there's something wasn't right there.
No, there was something not right there. But if you look at those three players you just mentioned, Cisse, Matijovski, Sigurdsson, Davis, Howard and Karajan, very different players, all of them. Mm. Very different.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what made it more likely to work than what we've got at the moment. I mean, take Mailer out of it, because we've hardly seen him. When we did, he was shocking, to be fair. Swift, Kelly, similar types of players. I mean, Swift's a more forward-thinking a midfielder, but they're just what I call pretty boys on the ball. Do you know what I mean? They're on the ball, they spread
players.
It about. Yeah. And Bakuna, again, he's sort of, like I said earlier, he's good energy. It does for a good set piece, but sometimes you think to yourself, oh, you should be giving us more. There's more to come from you, but you never seem to get it. Whereas the team we're talking about, Cisse, the best performance I ever seen him have was against Aston Villa when he played centre back. He made one shocking error in it, but other than that, I thought it was excellent. Matioski, he is that pretty boy, nice on the ball.
Yeah, was a little bit of a luxury player. And it was kind of, I think he's before his time really in English football. And certainly for Reading, playing in a 4-4-2, I don't think he didn't quite have the running or the physicality. And whoever he was next to had a lot to do to make up for it.
They did. But what he would do, he'd pick passes that no one else would ever see in a million years. Sometimes no one did see them, including the players he was giving
on
to.
A completely different pitch, wasn't he?
But I love Matioski again. Goal he scored against Liverpool, fantastic strike. Yeah. He was an excellent footballer, but just wasn't the right time for him, I don't think. Sigurdsson, again, you know what he gave you. Sometimes you wouldn't see him in the game, and then you see the goals he scores now, just completely out of this world.
Yeah.
Davis, more of a battling type of player. Howard always looked overweight, but again, very good on the ball. And Carajan was just 100 mile an hour. He was like a little wasp, wasn't he? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Tackles, and he just run all over the place. So you'd have to give it to them. Have I got to pick two or have I got to pick one?
I think 4-4-2, pick two.
Okay, well, I'd have to pick... it's hard for me to leave Matioski out because I used to like him, but you'd have to pick Sigurdsson, and just to protect the fact that Sigurdsson's a midfielder, you'd probably have to have Carragher.
Yeah, that's. I think I'm going to have to agree with you. Cissé is so close, but Cissé, I don't know, I think he dropped off a little bit too quickly. As we went into the Championship, he didn't quite stand up and say, you know what, I am going to be the player who's going to destroy the midfield and keep it together. He kind of let that as a sign that his career at Reading was sort of coming to an end, and he kind of drifted in and out of it.
Yeah, he was too inconsistent, Cissé, unfortunately for him. But again, he had all the attributes to be a good centre-back or centre-midfielder, just sometimes his ability let him down and maybe his will.
And he scored one of my favourite goals I've ever seen live was the fourth goal when we beat Bristol City 4-1 away from home in that first year back in the Championship. Pinged it from about 30 yards into top corner.
Yeah.
And that just shows you that, you know, ball winning midfielder, as soon as he does that, you think, wow, this guy's got so much he can give to a team. And then, I can't, where did he go after us? Was it just...
It just drifted away, really, isn't it? I don't know, I think he ended up maybe in France, back in France, I'm not sure. It's funny, actually, if you put them up against each other, that you say probably like Kelly compared to the others would be your sort of Matioski type comparison. Mm. So who would you pick out of them two? Do you know what I mean? At the moment, I don't know. I used to like Matioski, but it's a tricky one and one for the sort of listeners at home to have a think about because
Kelly works hard.
He does work hard. He can tackle. Mm. He scored the odd good goal, but Matioski was, I think, a different level and he scored the odd good goal, but he probably lacked Kelly's physicality getting around a pitch.
Yeah, I would love to see Matioski come in. If he was 23 now, I think he'd be in the Premier League immediately because that was his level of vision. And the coaches these days, as soon as you have that level of vision, they'll work around it. They'll find a solution.
Yeah.
Because Kelly's vision is good, but it's not Premier League level like Matioski's was. No, I think that's the difference between them for me.
And again, the other comparison now, I suppose you'd have to put Swift up against Sigurdsson. And there's no comparison, is there?
It's almost sad when you think that's the level, that's the same ilk of player that we've, or the same mould, and that's what we've got to replace it at the moment. And Sigurdsson obviously is a one-off, but you think Swift, he's got relative technique. He's not quite Sigurdsson level, but he's not bad.
Thing is with Swift, when he doesn't play, you seem to miss him. It's dead balls and you think, oh, Swift should be playing. And then when he does play, you think, why is Swift playing?
Why is he there?
It just doesn't, you know what I mean? It sort of divides opinion by the fact that when he's missing, you think you miss him. And then when he's there, you think we didn't miss him.
The idea of him is much better than the reality. I think that must be what it is. Is that you think, you watch a football game, you think, oh, if we had a player driving through the middle at the moment, and that'd be, or someone to put a ball in, that'd be great. But he doesn't actually do those things is the problem.
Or he rarely does them.
Yeah.
But a worrying thing for me is if you look at all those midfielders you've read out, they're not great, are they?
No, there's a lot of Championship quality in that, isn't there? There's not...
They're not Sidwell.
No.
For Sigurdsson is, obviously. We could take him out of that list. But other than that, I think you're really struggling.
No, there's even Ledgertwood, I think, walks into that team above pretty much all of those players.
For his
quality in winning the ball. He walks in there above Cissé. He walks in there probably just above Carajan for me on his ability to break up the play.
He was more of a protector, wasn't he, Ledgerwood? He'd nick the ball and give it to someone decent because he couldn't play football, could he?
No. which he found out to his great cost in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Well, let's do left midfield then. It might be a little bit cut and dry again. Mo Bower and Josh Sims versus McEnough and Robson Kanu. I think McEnough that year... He was new that year as well, so it wasn't his best season by any means, but from what he went on to become and the club captain asset that he was, he was always one of those players that as soon as fans started criticising him, all of the players and everyone at the club would immediately come out and say, no, he's exactly what we need as a club captain.
Yeah.
And for that, I think he deserves a lot of respect.
Yeah, during tricky times, I think he was used as a little bit of a scapegoat, Makhanov, probably because he was a captain and, you know what I mean, we sort of relied on him a little bit. Never a great winger, I wouldn't say, but again, he worked hard. He sort of never really let you down, did he?
And yeah.
He did score the odd wonder goal as well.
And McDermott had that really annoying tendency of if we were 2-1 down with 10 minutes to go, he put Makhanov in the middle as a sort of sign of intent, but it just never worked for me. It didn't.
No, he wasn't a central midfielder,
yeah,
was he?
Yeah, there was no basis for it other than, well, this is the only thing I can think of is like what McDermott was saying at that point. So
but I would say picking him, if you look at the other threes up against, all of them have the potential to have a better career than Makhanov. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even Rob Sicardo, again, another player that divides opinion. Even now, I think, where he's at West Brom, he's in and out and then he'll score a wonder goal. But Sims, if you'd think if he can continue the way he's going, he might have a decent career, a really good one. Mm. Not great, but good. And Mo Barrow, it's all there for him. It's whether he uses it or not.
Yeah.
A bit like Kepa in many ways, I suppose, Barrow.
Yeah, I think Barrow, he obviously has the pace of Kebe, but does he have the pure technique to dribble past and pull out a trick and then take it past him? And then, because I always think, like the Championship wingers in particular, they'll beat a player and then they'll think, oh my God, I'm brilliant at football. I'm going to beat all these players and score a brilliant goal.
Yeah.
And in reality, they should have beat player and then passed the ball because they're not good enough to do it a second or a third time.
No.
So as soon as you've done it once, make the most of that and get rid of it.
Yeah, even especially with your pace, just give it to someone and keep running. Do you know what I mean? Get it back. But good players make good decisions, and that's why they're at Reading and not somewhere higher.
Yeah, simple as that. That's true. I'll go Makhanov. No arguments for that for left mid then.
No arguments. I think.
So let's round us off then. Strikers, two strikers of the following: John Daddy Bodvarsson, Sam Baldock, Yaku Mate, Mark McNulty, Simon Church, Gregor Zraziak, Shane Long, Noel Hunt, and David Mooney. Are there any? What is the argument for Mooney being in this team?
No, there is no argument for Mooney being in this team. There's also no argument for Church and Raziak getting anywhere near it because Raziak was poor when he came here, and Church had a good season.
Raziak was all right. He was one dimensional. I think is the word.
Yeah, he's
just put the ball in the box, and he might get on the end of it.
Yeah, but he wasn't great, was he?
No, that was it. He did an overhead kick at Torquay once, and that's pretty much the nexus for Meyer. He's never going to get any higher than that.
Reminds me a little bit when Sean Goethe came down here, and he was a very similar type player where he was poor, but he put the ball in it.
Yes, it's just almost immeasurable lack of pace.
Sometimes people baffle me how they become footballers and just sort of end up with 15 goals at the end of the season, or 20, or be Man City's top scorer at the time.
Yeah. Simon Church at the time, that season, I suppose the season after to a slight extent as well, where you think at that time you've got a striker who has the potential to be like Shane Long or, you know, go and have a good career.
Yeah, had really one good season, didn't he, when he was really a threat off the bench. I think they used to say he was McDermott's son, some of the games he got afterwards, but yeah, he did have one good season, but he couldn't get anywhere near a side that I don't think was against any ex-Reading team. I'd think he struggled to get anywhere near a bench for a team that was getting picked out of two different years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think with his career, it became apparent because what he'd basically do was run around a lot and then LaFonda would come off the bench and score.
Yeah.
And when it became apparent that you can't really form a career off of that attribute and running around a lot, you got to score some goals and whatnot as well. And maybe, you know, he went to Charlton, who weren't a very good team anyway, so there wasn't the type of player to sort of back him up. Then he got exposed quite a lot, I think, as a footballer.
But it's international footballer, don't forget. He did play for Wales.
Yeah, significant number of times, yeah.
So he's done all right for himself. Do you know what I mean? Made a career out of football, and that's what I would say. That's all you could really ask for.
Yeah, but I think in terms of front two here, maybe John Daly Bodvarsson is going to work away, and I'm not going to put Sam Baldock in myself because...
Again, he's not got enough credit yet, has he? Do you know what I mean? He's not built up enough credit. And maybe if you look back at this in 10 years' time and do it again, you might pick some different players.
Yeah.
Mate might end up scoring 60, 70, 80 goals already, you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But based on what we're looking at right now, I think you'd have to say Long is a standout there. And I'd have to give it Noel Hunt as well because he always put in a good shift for Reading and he scored a lot of important goals. And for a small player, was brilliant in the air.
Yeah, and if you think as well, that obviously Shane Long was the main man that season and the season after. Noel Hunt stuck around for another like 3-4 years after that or so, and he was consistently did the job that we all sort of hoped and wanted him to do.
And like his brother, really, they always gave you everything they had, and whether they was the best footballer or not, was debatable, but they gave you everything they had, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, so in total then, that means we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 players out of the 9-10 team, and then it's Yadom, and is that Liam Moore as well, who's snuck in as the current crop. And I think that's, I mean, it's difficult comparing, I think, to the Rodgers team, because that Rodgers as manager, they underperformed considerably, and we know with the benefit of hindsight after that that they, it was a good team because it did get to the playoff final, and a lot of those players won the league the year after that one as well. So it was a good team.
Yeah, it was a good team, and I think you, like I said earlier, you build up credit for players when you look back in the past. You know what I mean? Because you forget their dreadful games in general, whereas these current crop are a bit more stuck in the memory.
Fresh.
Yeah, a bit more fresh, their errors. So yeah, you do. But again, in 10 years' time, you might look back and have a totally different side. And let's hope so, because it's a bit worrying that only three or two players got in the team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So if anyone has any other sort of years that they want us to divulge into, and has any opinions as to we've got it massively wrong, maybe Jordan Obita should be in there, or you think that Paul McShane is actually better than Ivo Ingemarsson, then do let us know on the Twitter, the Facebook, and thetarlessend@gmail.com. And speaking of which, we'll now go into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
As ever, when Reading Football Club win, the mailbag is quite short, shall we say. So
that's been the same for 10 years, Mark.
Yeah, some things will never change, and Reading fans deciding not to get angry when we win is perfectly reasonable in a large number of ways. However, we'll start with Ryan and SK both got in with a similar sort of question then. Ryan asking, should Jarkola remain in goal against Birmingham? And SK asking via Twitter, it was a mental game, don't know how we won it, and should Jarkola remain in the net? And I think the simple answer for me really is yes.
I think yes, because as a manager, I think you lose total credibility for taking players out that have proven or had really good games and saying, actually, no, not today. I don't need you in the side.
Mm.
I think it'd be a disgrace if he didn't play. Now, whether you think he's the best goalkeeper or not is debatable. And maybe people will be sat at home saying, well, he's not the best goalkeeper out of three. But if you're going to bring a player in and ask him to play and he gives you a performance that basically wins you the game, makes probably two or three really good saves, and then you say to him, actually, you can, Manone's fit now, you can sit back on the bench. I think that sends a terrible message to the rest of the side and certainly to the individual himself.
Yeah, but it says the saying goes, form is temporary, class is permanent, but none of the others have any form. So,
well, much class, really.
Yeah, so you pick the one who's got a bit of form and that's one of the two assets.
Yeah, you can't. I don't think you can drop him. I don't think that'd be fair to him. And again, if he comes in and he makes a howler against Birmingham and we get beat, I don't think anyone can blame the manager for playing him again.
Mm.
So I think it's an easy decision, really.
Yeah, Wim, former host, Av, obviously friend of the show, saying, should Tyler Blackett get a new contract? Now he's emerged as this sort of assist king down the left-hand side. Everyone else is getting new contracts. I mean, these contracts are long as well.
Yeah, Tyler Blackett's still a good age, isn't he? I don't think he's that old. I'm not sure how exactly old is he. He's at 26.
I'd say about 24, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe a bit younger. So, again, there's still improvement to come for him. If he can stop himself switching off like he has done in his Reading career now and again, then I think Tyler Blackett's as good as any. He's not great, but he's not bad.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried in a sense that he's leaving Omar Richards out to give Blackett game time. And for me, like, obviously, academy players do have a little bit of bias in their favour, but if you want to back someone to, you know, grow as a player, and he seems to be coming from a really good base, Richards, but he's not getting that opportunity under Clemens.
No, he's not, and maybe Tyler Blackett's blocking his way that way, but I think it will depend on what the club are going to do with the fact we've got a big squad and Tyler Blackett. If, again, I think it depends if Obita comes back. It's been a long time out, do you know what I mean? They might just say to Obita, sorry, you're not going to play again, and then we only have one left back at the club. So, well,
if they're going to loan out Richards maybe in January as Obita comes back.
Maybe. But yeah, Tyler Blackett, he's another one that divides opinion, which is unfortunate. But that's his own fault. And if they gave him a new contract, would I be bothered about it? No. If they didn't, would I be bothered about it? No.
We'll live either way.
I think we will.
Wim also asked, do you back Clement in leaving Barrow out? And at the moment, I mean, who played left mid? It was kind of...
Well, it was they played sort of two strikers off a striker, didn't they?
Yeah, so
they didn't
really like Baldock has flirted with it a little bit, but not certainly no natural left winger was playing against Millwall.
No, and maybe that's why they'd left Barrow out, because they wasn't really playing a winger as such. Mm. They was asking to do a sort of second forwards job. I don't know if Clement was the one who sold Barrow when he was at Swansea. I'm not sure. I didn't check that out.
He certainly didn't. You know, he loaned him out a couple of times. I think went to Blackburn and Leeds, and both times Danny did pretty crap as well.
So. Yeah, so whether they've got form and they don't really, he doesn't really fancy him, which I feel that might be happening. I think that might be the problem. It seems strange to me that he put Luca on the bench and leave Barrow sat in the stand or sat at home.
Yeah.
He wasn't injured. We know that for a fact. Clement was quite honest about that during his interview. He said, I just left him out for footballing reasons. It's up to Mo Barrow really to prove that he shouldn't be left out for footballing reasons. He hasn't really done that this year. I can't point to a great performance from him. So
even at the back end of last year,
yeah,
there wasn't a couple when he was obviously he was doing it right. But when Clement came in, I can't think of any games when Barrow said, you know, this, I'm going to keep on doing it for Clement like I did for Stan.
It makes you wonder if they got a bit of form together. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
And Clement strikes me as the type of coach who probably can build grudges and aggro a little bit easily.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we don't know that for sure, but it might look that way to some people from the outside.
Mm.
We know Barrow's a match winner on his day, and I would be tempted to have him on the bench always if you need to win a game.
Yeah, if you're 1-0 down away from home or even at home, you need to put a ball over the top, then there's no one who's going to chase it better than Barrow in the club. So
even sticking through the middle. I mean, yeah. I don't know why they haven't given that a go. If you've got Mate and players like that playing off of him, then why not give him a go through the middle? But yeah, he's not proved he should be in his team, so he can't really complain. But I was surprised he wasn't at least on the bench.
Mm. Yeah, well, I told you mailbag was short, because that's it. That's our four questions, and we'll be moving on now to discuss the Birmingham and Swansea games ahead.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So as I mentioned earlier, we're recording this a little bit inconveniently for those who are listening on a Wednesday morning or Thursday or what have you, because by the time you've heard this, Reading have played Birmingham. At the time of recording it, we haven't. So, that late equaliser is really absolutely gutting.
It's terrible.
Or brilliant.
Especially after leading for most of the gatch, but losing in the first half.
That red card for Mate, though. Was it handball? I don't know. He kind of picked it up on the goal line. I don't mind.
We'd have to do a lot of endings to this show to guess what's going to happen.
When it's the EastEnders, like big finales, Christmas finales, they record all the different plot lines. They record all those. But yeah, it's looking at as we are at the moment, a point against Birmingham, no matter what, almost satisfactory?
Yeah, they were on a good run. I was quite surprised, actually. Birmingham haven't started the season great, but in recent weeks, I think they've gone undefeated for quite a few games now.
Haven't been beaten at home yet.
Yeah, and again, they're getting results at clubs you wouldn't expect them to. Mm. Stoke, for example, when they most people beat Stoke, but you wouldn't expect Birmingham on last year's form to be going to Stoke and getting results. They've definitely picked up. Like you said earlier, they're a big, strong team. They know the division. They've got some good players. It's going to be tough. But Reading, to be fair, Reading, apart from the West Brom game, it's a bit of a blip. We've been pretty good away from home in general.
I mean,
we've chucked a lot of games away, don't get me wrong, but we've never looked out of them.
Feels like the pressure's off away from home a little bit on these players, and they turn up, they find a little extra gear or an extra level quite often. And like against Brentford and Blackburn, they sort of think, hang on, we can actually do this, and there's no one to tell them they can't, so they do it.
Even the first half against West Brom, it was very good until West Brom battered us in the second. But you never know with Reading. I think if you got a draw, I think we'd all be happy with that. But there's still a little bit of a gap, isn't there, between us and the sort of next team above, and we need to sort of bridge that pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's actually built out now. Ahead of the Birmingham game, there's sort of Reading, Rotherham, Preston, Millwall, Hull and Ipswich as the bottom sort of six, and then there's a 4-point gap up to Bolton, and that's where Stoke are as well, which you can't really rely on Stoke hanging around too much longer at the bottom. And Bolton on Wednesday at home to Nottingham Forest. So, it's, you know, there's winnable games going on. Obviously, Birmingham playing a winnable game as well, so we can't really rely too much on other teams dropping points now.
No, and like I said, there's a gap there that needs bridging pretty quickly, and you can do it within a week in the Championship, but it's whether you do it or not is a different matter. But yeah, I don't see any reason we can't go down and at least score a goal, and then you never know what might happen, as long as you can keep a clean sheet, which hasn't happened at all, except for once. I think Reading can get a draw there. They could win it on their day, but you never know.
Yeah, good time to play Swansea on Saturday. They've dropped off considerably, really.
Yeah, still, they've got some good players, haven't they? And you'd think Reading would be up against it at Swansea away.
Mm. Yeah. So, what I mean, in the short term, what do you think needs to change within the team to get these the sort of the performances back on track? Like, because obviously, you know, mid term, long term, you can sign your players and whatnot. But in the short term, what Clement has to work with, what needs to change?
Well, he needs to get the best out of the players that he's got, and I don't think he's getting that. I don't think there's anyone this year that you can look at, apart from Yadam, who you said earlier, that has played to their full potential. Most weeks, you can't do it every week, but just most weeks, there's no one that I can sit here and say, do you know what, I think they've had a really good season so far, despite us playing poorly. Even Moore, yeah, he's been all right, but he's not pulled up any trees. Allori, yeah, he's been all right, but he's not pulled up any trees. You know what I'm saying? Players like Gunter and that have been in and out. Like we said earlier, the wingers haven't really produced. Barrow, probably your biggest asset, your strongest attacking player, has produced nothing.
Isn't even in the squad anymore.
And that, and Bob Varson, again, he's played well when he's played, but he's been in and out through injury. No one has played well consistently since the start of the season. And unfortunately, that comes back to the manager, because his job is to get the best out of what he's got. And if you ain't doing that, then you ain't doing something right.
Yeah, and the thing is that he's kind of, what he is doing is doing enough to keep his job. There's no, it's almost no argument over Clement's position at the moment, because we're outside the relegation zone. We are occasionally winning, and when we win, it's, you know, 3 goals against Hull, 3 goals against Millwall, get some good points away from home.
And he seems to get a good result when he needs a good result, doesn't he, rather than consistently get good results. And like I said, he needs to get the best out of the players he's got, and it's somewhat flagged at the start of the season. There's a lot of players that are underperforming. Aluku, Swift, even Kelly. I just don't think that the players that he's got there, I wouldn't say they weren't giving him all they had, but he's certainly not getting good performance out of them. So that's what he needs to do.
Yeah, and there's a couple of stats that I sort of picked out as the season overall at the moment. Reading are currently the fourth worst team for conceding shots per game in the league, with the fifth highest for making interceptions and the third lowest for catching an opponent's offside. And I was looking at those various stats, and it just shows to me that we have the potential to, you know, I mean, those are pretty much all defensive stats. We have the potential to make our mark on a game, and certainly in a lot of games we've been winning the aerial battles, we've been occasionally having more possession, stuff like that, but too often those are for 5 minute spells as opposed to for 85, 90 minutes.
Interesting that about catching players offside there, being one of the third lowest. You'd think with Reading's back four having the pace it's got in it now, that Reading could play quite a high line.
We don't.
Yeah. But you could, and if McShane and O'Shea are in it, then
you can't.
Yeah. But at the moment, with Allori and Moore and Yidam and, you know, Blackett or Gunter, whoever's playing wide, there's plenty of pace in that team to play a higher line and get further up the pitch, but just not doing it by them stats alone.
Yeah, maybe it comes down to discipline, something like that. Maybe a deep line, you don't need to be too disciplined. You're right next to your goal, you know, pretty more straightforward to defend, whereas if you're high line, you've all got to be in the same position or move forward as a unit, and that's something that
maybe
the midfield has to stop the balls coming through.
But also, but if they're playing a deeper line, that's encouraging teams to try and batter them airily, and that's what's happened over the last couple of weeks, especially against West Brom. Whether you got away with it against West Brom with air strikers, probably not, but you didn't get away with it either way, so
yeah,
might be worth a try in retrospect.
Yeah, well, predictions then to finish this off. Currently Wim is cleaning up in the prediction league. Sadly, your defence of your championship isn't proving
collapsed.
Too brilliant. Wim's on 12 after himself, myself and Ollie Allen all got the Millwall result correct. We all said there's going to be a win. Tom Crocker's currently bottom from the Wokingham paper, having, I think he said, draw for that one. And the predictions for the Birmingham game, which I have to hand, and obviously anyone listening to this in a retrospect will see how badly wrong we are. Simeon's gone for 2-2. I've gone 1-0 defeat. Ollie's gone 2-1 defeat. Tom has gone 1-1. Johnny 3-1, as well as Handbags. They've also gone 3-1. And Wim has gone for 2-1 defeat. So wherever you lay. I mean, there's an open goal for a victory there if you want to get some points back.
Let's go for it. And let's say 2-1 Reading.
2-1 Reading.
I don't think it's going to happen, but when I do think it happens, I'll get it wrong anyway. So.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been doing. I've been to when I think we're going to lose, like at Villa, we go and draw. Then when I think we're going to win at home to Bolton, we go and lose.
So yeah, that's Reading for you. Easy to predict.
Yeah, there's no sense in this. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, Tuesday night, Birmingham. Saturday, Swansea away. And all that's left me is to thank you, Wesley, for popping down and having a nice little chat about Reading this afternoon.
Always a pleasure. Love it.
And we'll be back next week to review those two away games. Ollie will be in on Thursday. And, you know, we're out of the relegation zone at the moment. Yaku Mate scoring some goals. And, you know, maybe we'll have that final icing on the cake and welcome John O'Shea back into the team as well. And then we'll cruise back up to mid-table and be safe. And we can enjoy the season from then on in. Come on, you arse.
Just stop.